and welcome to the very first episode of Research, Patients and the Public by the Ludwig Boltzmann Society. The LBG is a research organisation aiming to open up research processes by involving multiple stakeholders outside academia. An overarching goal is maximising the impact of research for society. Involvement of external knowledge providers is essential here. In this podcast, we want to shine a light on LBG projects in which this is done. We call this way of empowering public and patient involvement and engagement, or in other words, PPIE. Let me introduce to you Roy. He's a chronic patient. A couple of years ago, he diagnosed himself with a rare condition while being bedbound. In the meantime, his professional life circles around empowering patients. At the LBG Open Innovation in Science Centre, he currently fills the position of patient in residence. So, hi Roy, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Stuart.
That is a story. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I was a regular teenager back in Israel, where I come from. I went to my mandatory army service, and we all have to go to military. And I was a combat soldier in the paratrooper brigade. Everything was okay, but one day during training, I was injured in my lower back. And after a few months, the pain didn't go away. And alongside the pain, I had very strange symptoms that eventually led to a bedbound situation that lasted almost 7 years.
Wow. How old were you when this happened?
I was 19 at the first injury occurred, and I walked again normally at the age of 28, but it was 7 hard years that I could really not function at all.
And did you have any sort of work done on you then by the professionals?
So I've seen more than 30 doctors, 33 doctors as consultants, and many others, while being admitted to hospitals. Countless amounts of tests and examinations and medication trials and whatever, but nothing helped, actually.
I was going to say, because being in bed for that particular time, it must be very worrying and also boring, too.
Yeah, so I had to fill up my time somehow, so I decided to educate myself. I enrolled into the Open University, and I devoted all my free time to learning, actually. But I still held this dream of becoming a doctor myself one day, so I was actually just preparing for it back at the day.
So were you learning all subjects or just medical subjects when you were bedbound?
Actually, I studied a lot of sciences in general, natural sciences, philosophy, psychology. I was really intrigued by the human experience, and my journey as a patient led me to believe that the system is broken. And it's not only the science behind medicine, it's the humanity behind medicine that is missing. So I tried to engulf all these subjects while studying.
So what you did, you're emphasizing that every single patient should empower her or himself then at a certain basic level.
Oh, definitely. So with me, it was the most basic level. I had to diagnose my own illness. And I always stress, in my TED talk and every time I've been interviewed, that it's absolutely not the job of a patient. You should be informed. You should be in charge and responsible for your health. You should be an acting part of your decision making. But you shouldn't diagnose yourself. I think it's something that we should leave for professionals while being a partner of this process.
Mm. But obviously you said you had to learn about the medical side of the condition. So how does the higher level of empowerment or involvement from the patient's point of view look like?
So for me, this was a rare condition. Today, we know it's less rare than we thought. But actually, back in the day, there weren't any single doctor in Israel that knew about this condition in the first years. Luckily for me, there were 2 doctors who actually did research later on. So for me, the higher level and the lower level were more, first of all, to get a diagnosis, because As a patient that is bedbound without a diagnosis, you're immediately labeled as a crazy patient. And I don't have any problems with mental illness. I told them if I have a mental illness, please admit me and treat me. But then I realized mental illnesses are also being treated as like the black sheep of medicine. So I had no diagnosis. And my label was hypochondriac. Kind of a black sheep of a patient. I would come to my doctor, you know, wearing a pajama because dressing up was so tough for me. I would faint even if I took off my shirt at one point. So I actually looked to him like this really strange guy who is looking for being sick.
Well, I can definitely confirm you are compass mentors. And I want to know a little bit more about how you got here from Austria, from Israel. How did that happen?
So my journey was a bit different. I diagnosed myself. My parents took me to many, many doctors, and the 32nd doctor in account told my parents when I was 25, after 3 years of lying in bed, that I would never recover. He actually stood above them in a very like a power kind of pose and told them that he, even not me as my name, he will never work, he will never marry a woman, he will never go to university. The only way he can cope with it is just like to stay in bed, maybe take a wheelchair and, you know, just have a little walk or drive around home. And when I heard this, I decided I have to take matters to my own hands, and I started to actually study medicine. Before that, I was just enriching myself, but now I was on a crusade because I realized that a patient without a diagnosis, it's like a man with no name. That's how I felt. And I spent 2 years in bed studying the curricula of the Tel Aviv Medical University, Tel Aviv University Medical Faculty, and I diagnosed myself. And it was only the first stage, because as you probably guess, a patient who comes with a diagnosis is even crazier than a patient without a diagnosis. Yeah.
But it must have been, personally, it must have been hard having people standing around the bed referring to you as he and him.
Oh, yeah. I feel that in many cases, I wouldn't say most like it used to be 10 years ago, 5 years ago, but in many cases, a patient is like, I call it a sack of symptoms. There is this being on the bed and it presents the symptoms and all sort of biochemical reactions and changes, but it's not a person, at least not for any member of the staff. Like, they see you as a person, of course, individually, but as a system, you're like a byproduct. It's like a factory that you have to intake and discharge. And for me, it's something that was unacceptable. Nobody called my name. Nobody treated me as equal. I was feeling maybe as a child. Maybe you know, they were infantiling me, if there's a word like this. That was my feeling.
And I will call you by your name, Roy, and ask you another question. You are now in Austria at the Open Innovation in Science Center at the LBG. As we mentioned earlier on, you are the patient in residence. And you mentioned beforehand, this is the third level of empowerment for you. So how is this going?
So my journey here was, again, a bit different. I diagnosed myself. I went through almost 2 years of rehabilitation. I decided not to go back to medical school because of the system's structure. I wanted to change it. You know, sometimes you can change from within. I decided to change from externally. In Israel, the easiest way to do as a startup nation is to open a startup. And I started a series of, first of all, startups that try to tackle different verticals, different problems in healthcare. I did four of those. And then I realized it's not enough. This tackles like assistive tools or disruptive tools in maybe the second level. But then I realized the patient is still left unempowered. So I started to found organizations and NGOs that connect the dots between those patients and doctors. The communication was the missing part. And actually, while producing TEDx events as a volunteer in Israel, I realized that if you give patients the ability to tell their story, to teach them storytelling, they can actually communicate better with their doctors. And if the doctors knows how to listen better, they could actually intake more of the information they need. So I tackled it in three different layers. The first is to have developed assistive tools for doctors to get better information of the patient, to train patient to be more responsible and involved. and to bridge it with all sorts of more project aimed to general empowerment and voice raising or advocacy of patients. I got to Austria while actually giving a lecture here in Vienna, and Claudia, our CEO, actually listened to my talk, and she said, wow, this is amazing that there is somebody who has these backgrounds and expertise, and maybe we as a research organization can learn something from this patient, which is totally unorthodox. And I think that's what's special about the LBG. It's totally thinking outside of the academic box, because in main academia, I don't think I would have been appointed as, you know, like a resident in any sort without a PhD, which I don't possess yet. But here in the LBG, experts are experts, no matter of the education. Mm-hmm. And this is something that healthcare should learn as well.
So what you're saying, I guess, although not many people have done it, what you're saying is that patient empowerment can also become a career for other people.
Definitely. So you see more and more patients that are working in advocacy as patient advocates in consultations for pharmaceutical companies and healthcare organizations. We call those people e-patients usually. They're our patient leaders. E stands for empowered, or electronic or digital patients. So they can lead a group, you know, on online, like Facebook or a forum, on Reddit or so on. But they can also be opinion leaders, like on YouTube, on Instagram, and so on. And it's amazing to see today that you have those expert executive patients, but you also have patients lying in bed, taking videos and photos of themselves on Instagram.
And this wouldn't have happened 7 years ago.
Definitely. The technology enables it, and the democratization of this kind of distribution of voices, as they call it. Because today you can follow a patient with or throughout his journey, and this patient becomes from this disabled person to enabling person, actually empowering others. So you have this chain of empowerment joined together by physicians, nurses, and patients that are just wanting to improve the system.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience you've got there. And do you see, or did you experience any evolution of patient involvement and empowerment over the course of the past years?
Definitely. So first of all, you know, 10, 15 years ago, at least in Israel, you hear those crazy academics talking about involvement, and it wasn't that common. But today, every hospital, the slogans usually is around, like, we put patients in the center. Some of them use it as a slogan, but you can see more and more organizations who have, like, patient service officer. I have a friend in the Tel Aviv Medical Center. She is the patient experience officer, or patient happiness officer. How beautiful is that? She's in charge of the happiness of the patient. So you have more empowered by the organizations, more empowered by patients or patient organizations, which is obvious because they're their job. But we start to see more and more research organizations like our own, or involved by the NHS, or in America, you have several amazing organizations that are putting in a lot of money in researching the involvement and empowerment of patients, which I think is a lovely thing.
And are there more patients like you around the world? Are you in touch with those patients?
Yeah, so they are starting to form some chains of patient leaders. It's so, you know, it's so vast today that it's become a business model. So you have this, like, business models of patients becoming patient leaders and getting awards and rewards about being leaders and empowering others. You have this social rewarding system for several organizations. I know many, many patients like me in different stages, because it's very easy to look at me like you look at me now. The, you know, our listeners can see, but I'm looking okay.
You're very healthy. You look good.
Thank you. But 10 years ago, if I talked for more than 10 seconds, I would have fainted. I couldn't even sit straight. And it's important to stress that I'm still a chronic patient. And even if you're still a patient with a severe condition and your situation is still grim, you can still empower others and you can still be empowered. Because sometimes people see me and they don't see this manifestation of illnesses. And even, you know, there was like a marketing expert who told me, you need a cane, like Dr. House in the House MD series. because then you'll have this character. But why would I need a cane? Like, I'm a human. This is my identity. And I'm still doing my job. And I think that no matter what your status is, because it's very easy for me to come as a patient resident for this luxurious kind of position in an organization and talk to doctors. But my voice equals this guy lying in bed or this girl lying in bed, and nobody listened to her in a hospital. So I think it's the same voice, and it's the same treatment that we should get.
Yeah. And can you do everything that normal people do now?
So I still have some disabilities. I'm on paper 100% disabled. I have tough days. I had a relapse 2 years ago. I had to go back for 6 months of rehabilitation in hospital. So it was morning until afternoon rehabilitation, evening startups and NGO management. I still have very bad days. It's hard for me to climb stairs. I will never be an athlete, but I'm running in a different form of running. Because I lost 7 years of my most beautiful life, most beautiful good years of life, and I want to accomplish the goal of empowering others as fast as I can. And I think it raises the question of invisible illnesses. And this is something that both research and healthcare don't tackle very much, because you see patients like me and they're invisible. And you can see it in buses, in airports, in train, that people are very rude towards people like me who sits in the handicapped chair, for instance. But the thing is that it's all about education of society, that illness is not just somebody sits on a wheelchair. Illness can be mental. Illness can be, it can be invisible like mine. It can walk and function. And I think it's time for the institution itself to look at patients as they kind of define themselves. You see it in the gay community, right? That today we're considering sexuality as something that you are defining yourself, and then you express it externally, and you ask the public to treat you this way, or to address you in a certain gender, for instance. So, as patients with invisible illnesses, we are inclined to be neglected. So I stress patients to raise their voice, and I stress organizations like us to research and to develop policies to include patients, both in research and in healthcare as stakeholders.
Mm-hmm. And so for you, finally, I would say things are certainly better than they were.
Definitely. So my physician was wrong. I did almost all of the above. I went to school, I have a partner in life, I did everything that the doctors say I wouldn't have. And this is, I think, the final and the most important level of empowerment. And for the ending of our podcast, I think it's very important to stress that the way that we address patient and the way that we talk to patient can define life or death. When I came back home that day after being told my life is over, even if it's not dying literally, I was actually considering committing suicide, because the doctor that I trusted told me I will never live a quality life. And I think that words has huge power, and inclusion means a lot for patients. So if I have an organization like ours that every time it will conduct a research with patient, you will have a PPIE, or like patient officer, that will address patients in the right manner and involve them, patient will feel empowered. If doctors will learn to use educational tools of empowering conversation or motivational conversation, it's something that's being studied a lot, patient will be empowered. We can not only eliminate illnesses, but we can also maybe eliminate depression and even suicidal actions by patients. So again, I think that doctors, researchers, organizations, policymakers, governments should treat patients like human beings.
Roy, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us today, and I can attest the fact that you are looking very fit and very healthy.
You too, Stuart, thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed our first episode of the podcast. Please leave comments if you want us to answer any questions on this subject. We're also happy about any comment that helps us shape this format.